Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I just want to point out a few things because I know this issue has been up before the court before, and I don't intend to talk at length. Though, as of course, I'm happy to answer any questions the judges might have. Just want to point out a couple of the canons of construction that have been employed in construing constitutional provisions. That is that the Constitution is to be construed to effectuate the understanding of the delegates to the Constitutional Convention and the voters who approved it, and also that when words that have acquired a technical meaning are used in the Constitution, they're to be given that meaning unless there is something to show they were employed in a different sense. Now, this court in Bethurum used those canons in looking at the phrase laws retrospective in their operation and determined that that phrase did have the technical meaning that it related only to civil rights and remedies.
Assuming you're right about that,
sure,
and that your office is in charge of representing these types of cases and upholding the constitutionality of these things, why has it taken decades for this argument to be made again?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, the first time this might have come up would have been when R.L. was argued, because I'm not aware
It could be that judges up here have been thinking about this for years, but that we don't decide cases on issues that aren't briefed or argued.
Yeah, and that's the problem. I wish this had been briefed and argued back then. It certainly would have been the most appropriate time to do it. But this is a case, frankly, I don't think has been, I think when I keysighted it, I don't know that I found too many citations to it beyond the 1960s. Now, the one exception was I can tell you how I came across it. The last time I had to deal with this issue, I just, in trying to distinguish that particular case from the FR and the RL and the more recent cases, I wasn't finding anything obvious, and I just decided to look at every single retrospective case I could find and see if something popped up. And there was a Western District case from about 2 years ago that in passing in dicta mentioned the retrospective as being limited to civil rights and remedies. And I kind of tracked that back. That didn't even cite Bethurum, but I tracked it back and finally found it.
But and if just, you track back,
yeah,
to the very beginning when this was adopted,
right,
there are criminal cases in which it was an issue back from within not very long after the constitutional provision was adopted. So there is that language in some of the cases, but there are other cases. There is a whole other line of cases that it has not been consistently applied merely to civil cases.
I must have missed those cases because I didn't find them. But I think, you know, the holding of Bethurum is pretty clear.
Well,
it hasn't been explicitly overruled. And if it's going to be overruled, I think it needs to be done explicitly.
Well, can you, you know, addressing the argument of
sure,
that case, and you do a good job finding it and making the arguments from it and explaining it, but as it totally depends, it doesn't cite anything for that argument other than the language of the Constitution itself and the language in the debates, some of which, as you noted, had been cited in one of our earlier cases in a dissent. And if I understand your argument, basically it's that we have a protection against ex post facto laws.
Right.
One of the delegates suggested that if we have a bar on laws retrospective in their operation, there's really no need to have either an ex post facto laws or a bar on impairment of contracts because retrospective laws cover everything, and the legislators rejected that and left in all the provisions. Is that basically the argument?
That might be part of it, and I don't recall that Bethurum went into the debates to any great extent.
Well,
they looked
don't
at
most of the debates,
states.
Deal with the fact that a county passed a tax or a bond issue after the fact.
So
in other words, at the end of the day, people were taxed when beforehand they wouldn't have been, and that violated
property.
That particular part of the debate actually went to a different provision that was attempted to add in that would have also barred curative and confirmatory laws, because what happened apparently, as I read the debate and read it again the other day, was some bonds were issued for a road construction project. They were the bonds actually were invalid because the proper procedure had not been followed, but the legislature then came in after the fact and passed a law that essentially validated them. So they wanted to add the language about curative and confirmatory to bar that kind of situation from happening again, and that provision did not make it through, of course, to the final
passage. But my understanding of your argument here today is that it must be that no law retrospective in operation applies only to civil laws because they didn't need it for criminal since there was also an ex post facto.
Right.
And I have two questions related to
sure.
that, which I'd like you to expand on. One is that, well, they also left in that no laws impairing contracts
right.
can be. That's civil. No
sure.
retrospective law certainly would apply to it. So to the extent the argument principally seems to be based in the case you rely on the fact that, well, why would they duplicate?
Right.
And retrospective must not have meant to apply to ex post, must have been meant to apply to only civil because they already had the criminal covered. Well, they already had a lot of the civil covered, too, but this was a broad provision that seemed to apply to everything, as they debated. And the second is it clearly didn't apply to all criminal because here you're saying the ex post facto clause would not bar it, but the retrospective clause would. So clearly there were spaces that it was trying to cover things
right.
like by having this broad provision, whether or not a good policy.
Right. No. And I think what the court relied on was to look at a Texas decision, which construed a similar provision, which found that that ex post facto covered retrospective criminal laws, at least to the extent as that's been defined, and that was sufficient to deal with the criminal laws.
But of course, it doesn't cover this one.
Right. Right. No. You're right. But I think that's a choice of how far you. Not necessarily every retrospective criminal law is going to be barred, but it's going to be barred within the confines of what ex post facto has been defined at. Now, as for the impairment of contracts, what I think the Texas court found and what the Missouri court adopted was that the retrospective was intended to cover the category of civil cases that did not fall within impairment of contracts.
And so I'm at the, exactly, because otherwise it sort of duplicates that, so it's intended
right.
to cover
it. And it does.
And why doesn't it, in the same way, since it doesn't say no civil law retrospective in its operation, it just says no law, why doesn't it apply to both? And much in the same way we had an issue recently about the scope of a provision in our Constitution that said the right of employees to collectively bargain mm-hmm. through their own representatives. It recognized that right. Sure. And 2 years after the adoption of that provision, we had a case that said it just meant private employees, not
right.
public. And we,
yeah.
5 years ago, said, no, it could have said that in the Constitution, but we can't add that word. Why isn't
right.
this a similar argument here?
Well, this is a case where frankly, I wish the court had done a little better job of exploring the historical analysis for retrospective as they did with ex post facto, because ex post facto nowhere in any constitution, I think, says criminal. But it has always been understood to apply exclusively to criminal. And they did a good job, I think, of historically tracing how that came about. Didn't go into the same amount of detail, unfortunately, in tracing retrospective, but found that it did, in fact, had acquired a usage in the legal community that was generally understood that it was only for civil remedies and did not apply to criminal.
And I understand your argument,
yeah.
and you make it well in your brief, but isn't that the same argument this court rejected in rejecting adding the word private to the Constitution and dealing with the right to collectively bargain? Here you're saying when it said no law, we should just know at the time they must have meant civil law because that's how it was generally understood, which is the exact argument this court rejected in that other case dealing with the right to collectively bargain.
Well, and I guess in that being, I mean, I know generally about that case, but not specifically, but
and what
I
said was people vote on what's written, not on what somebody thinks general legal understanding and knowledge is. These are constitutional provisions that people are voting on, and we have to interpret them as they're written was the basis of our rejection of that.
Right, understood, but I guess what I don't know from those collective bargaining cases is where those court decisions that came out originally found
the
basis.
2 years after that provision.
Yeah,
it's
very,
it's
very
almost
close in time.
A parallel. It really is amazing. Yeah.
Well, Mr. McPherson, let me rephrase the question.
Sure.
In a way that maybe gets to what I think Judge Stith is addressing. Assume that there's two legitimate basis. In this case, there's the thought that the rule of law ought to be predictable,
right?
Right, and there's there's 100 years of cases from this court which have applied this law to both civil and criminal. And then also assume that this is the legitimate thought that the Constitution ought to be interpreted based upon the text and what people meant at the time when they approved
right.
it. And so assume that you think both of those things are important. Where's your remedy now? Is your remedy to go to the legislature and try to get a joint resolution to remove the retrospective clause because it doesn't add anything? If you were right, if it was just to apply to civil laws because we got the ex post facto law, or is your remedy, as you're doing, to try to get this court to dial back the clock 100 years and reverse some cases when maybe the problem was that the lawyers presenting these issues didn't brief or argue them? And I assume you don't want us to decide cases that on issues that aren't briefed or argued.
The last part is generally true. And again, to my knowledge, what we'd be overruling would go back to about 2009 or thereafter, because I mean, I know Judge Breckenridge mentioned other cases, criminal.
Well, in the 40s, what about the Squaw Creek?
That was a civil case. It had to do with the drainage district. I don't think there was any criminal.
But I think it cites criminal cases in it.
Well, I'd have to relook at that and see if
either way, we've never limited it in our discussion of it, and we've applied it in two cases in the last 5 years, and there's nothing in it that says it only applies to civil. We would have to read that into it from the context of the legal understanding of it at the time.
Right.
Is there a precedent for doing that?
Well, I just think Bethurum itself, it states the rules that I mentioned at the beginning. It applies those rules, and it finds, you know, contemporaneously with the Constitution.
Do we have cases saying we use legal understanding of terms? Or doesn't this court normally, for statutes and constitutions, looks at dictionary definitions? It looks at plain meaning of words because they're being voted on by non-lawyers.
Well, you know, like I said, that particular rule was set out in Bethurum. Whether it's been set out in subsequent cases, I haven't, you know.
Now, Bethurum has never been cited in any briefs by the state previously to today, has it?
Well, the case we had last year, which was disposed of on procedural grounds because
what
it hadn't been raised
below. What was the name of that
case? Melvin Ray Davis.
Where it wasn't raised below, it was raised on
right,
appeal.
Right, right.
But it wasn't cited. Bethurum wasn't cited in RL or FR.
No, it was not.
And RL and FR the only two cases that you think we'd have to overrule if we adopted your position today?
Probably, and again, I think as we discussed last time, even RL dealt, as I recall, with a statute that's been since been amended, so it dealt with the situation of the person who had lived there previously having to move, which is no longer an issue. So really, FR is the most, you know, on-point case as it goes to these matters.
You'll have time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. You may proceed.
May it please the court.
Thank
you. I think the fact that it took the state this long to find the Bethurum case is indicative of why we've never seen it. It has never been cited as authority for the proposition that the retrospective clause in our Constitution only applies to civil cases.
Did you look at the arguments made to see if there was any arguments made at the time that it was adopted that indicate any intent that it would apply to criminal laws?
No, only the references that have been made to the constitutional convention debates. Is that what you're
right? Did
referencing?
You find any references during the constitutional debates which would suggest that there was any intention for it to apply to criminal laws?
Honestly, Judge, I didn't read it as carefully, you know, because the bottom line is that this court has recently, and really for the past 100 years, stated what it believes that retrospective law provision means.
So the same question I asked Mr. McPherson, then. What if we look at those two things, what's more important, that we now would say, well, it means what they thought it meant at the time, or that we should decide it in the manner in which we decided the last two cases? Which for our system of justice is better?
I think the latter, and this is why. Because the most recent cases have looked, as Judge Stith just said, at the plain ordinary, common language meaning of the words in that constitutional provision, and have attributed to them the same definition that's given in Black's Law Dictionary for a retroactive law, which is a legislative act which looks backward, contemplating the past, and affecting acts or facts that existed before that law came into effect. And so the court's most recent decisions are looking at the plain language of the Constitution. So comparing that to what was said during some debates, I would say that the most recent determinations by this court of what that language means is what this court should continue to follow.
Other than FR, and not counting RL, which the state indicates the statute at question in RL has been amended, but just looking at FR, other than FR, what other cases have indicated that these criminal statutes that have applied the retrospective application under this constitutional provision?
Your Honor, I anticipate this kind of a question, and unfortunately I didn't anticipate it at the time I wrote my brief. So this is not cited in my brief. But back in 1901, in State versus Kyle, 65 Southwest 763, this court had on appeal an appeal from a robbery conviction, which was a challenge to, as ex post facto, a constitutional amendment allowing prosecution by information. And in that case, this court said, every law that takes away or impairs vested rights is retrospective and is generally unjust. And this court also said, every law that is to have an operation before the making of it is retrospective. That's the same, essentially, definition that we have of retrospective law, which is a law that operates looking backward. And in that case, in State versus Kyle, this court was talking about a criminal type of thing. So there's evidence, you know, 10 years before Squaw Creek decision, where then all of these cases refer back to in terms of what is retrospective, that this court was contemplating retrospective as very broad, just as this court stated in RL that the constitutional bar on retrospective laws is broader than ex post facto. And even the state has just said an argument that this may not have been ex post facto, but it is retrospective. Well, if we take away retrospective applying to criminal laws, what's going to happen to those laws that are passed that don't qualify as ex post facto, but that this court and Kyle has recognized are unjust? The retrospective provision is broader, and it covers criminal type laws, any type of laws that look backward and give an effect to something that took place before that law took action.
Is this a case where it isn't retrospective because there is something in addition to the prior conviction that makes him guilty, and that is possession of the firearm?
I'm sorry, that there's...
It's not just the prior conviction that makes him guilty, but it's an additional act by him that makes him guilty?
Well, before I answer your question, I just have to mention that the state has not preserved any appeal of the merits ruling in this case. But in this case, I'm not sure, I think I understand your question, so I'll just say that he was charged with this crime for possessing a weapon, and it was stated in the information that he's guilty of it because in 2002 he pleaded guilty to possession of a controlled substance.
Do you understand what I'm saying, though? It's not merely that he has the prior conviction that makes him guilty of this new offense. It's that he has the prior conviction, and then some other conduct on his behalf makes him guilty.
The only thing he did was possess a firearm, which up to that point had always been...
Your point is that it has to bar something. It doesn't say... The cases that we've held improper retrospective from laws in the past haven't said, oh, we're going to add 5 years, they've imposed a duty like to register or a duty like where the person violated the law by living within X number of feet of a park or of a school. They didn't have to. They simply staying and doing what they were doing was a violation solely because of their prior conviction. And here the possession was a violation solely because of their prior conviction.
That is correct.
What if he had not owned a gun but had bought one? Would that then be an additional affirmative act which then could be barred because he was not guilty of anything and it was not solely based on his prior prior conviction, but he affirmatively went out and changed his situation by buying a gun?
Well, the problem here is that...
Would that be different than this situation here where he's suddenly sitting in his home with a gun, was not violating the law, and then suddenly was?
I think it is different because at the time that he entered his guilty plea to possession of a controlled substance, he knew that, or he may not have known, but the law at that time was that you had to be convicted of a dangerous felony to keep you from being able to possess a concealable firearm. And when he pleaded guilty to possessing a controlled substance, he retained the constitutional right to bear arms. So it's depriving him of a right that he had. It's divesting him of that right to bear arms. So I don't think it necessarily has to have him commit some kind of an act like going out and buying a gun.
Well, he doesn't have a vested right that they won't change the law and say now no felons can possess firearms.
That is correct.
So you're falling under either the affirmative obligation or duty, which doesn't apply here, or a disability, I take it is what you're saying here, because suddenly he no longer can.
Yes, that is true. And it's all based on that controlled substance conviction, which it's a new penalty for it that didn't exist at the time that he entered that guilty plea without him doing anything more. He may have had lots of guns in his house that he was allowed to have from the time he entered that guilty plea all the way up until the time that this law was passed, and now all of a sudden it's looking back at a past conduct and saying it's taking that away, and it's creating a new obligation on him to either get rid of those things or I lost my place.
I think you answered. Thank you.
Thank you. So I just wanted to point out that in the two cases, well, actually three, but RL, FR, and Rayner, and actually RL and FR, those defendants had preserved for appeal and presented to this court that those laws violated the ex post facto provision of the Constitution. And in both of those cases, this court said, we don't have to reach the ex post facto. So this court chose to apply the retrospective analysis to those criminal statutes, and that is what the Missouri courts have been doing ever since, and that's what the trial court did in this case. So if there are no other questions, we would ask that this court affirms the trial court's dismissal of count three, finding that this section was unconstitutional as applied to Mr. Honeycutt.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I guess first as a matter, it wasn't clear to me from the record whether he already possessed a firearm or not at the time. Maybe I missed that, but I didn't necessarily get that one way or the other.
Okay, I thought I'd read that, but we'll certainly study the record on that.
But I think it goes to, and what I do discuss in the brief is why, you know, the proper way to look at these are situations where the law fixes a person's status in regard to future conduct, which is something that has been found not to violate the ban on retrospective laws, because there generally has to be something done after the statute takes effect that incurs criminal liability, unlike the sex offender
registration. Well, we had the case where the person continued living in their home, and because it was too near a school, I think it was, that was a violation.
Right.
Isn't that comparable? Assuming he already had the weapon, wouldn't that be comparable?
I have to admit it would be.
And I understand you think the prior one was not correctly decided.
Well, perhaps there were other bases for doing it than retrospective, but
well, I'd have to go into that. Was the case moving wasn't a criminal charge, was it? It was whether or not that person had to register as a sex offender, as I recall.
If I'm
that was Doe.
Yeah, that was Doe. And the key thing there, which I think is the key thing to retrospective laws, is that because you've got that conviction, there's no way you can get away from the registration requirement. It's not a matter of you know, you have to do something else. It's a little bit like the argument Mr. McAdams presented in the last case. You know, it's, if you're just sitting there not doing anything, you're not violating the law. And that, I think, is a key distinction between the civil sex offender registration and these kind of criminal cases, which are always forward-looking and depend on some conduct that occurs after the enactment of the statute.
Because we have some cases where someone who is already in prison, suddenly statutes are passed requiring them to pay for their care or to pay for probation. And we've right. held that isn't a retrospective application, haven't we?
I don't believe so. Again, that's not a species of case I'm necessarily familiar with, but I, you know, those laws are on the books, so I have to assume they survived whatever challenges that have been raised against them.
It would be the effect of your argument that if the state here made it a crime for a person to possess a firearm because they previously had a criminal conviction, mm-hmm. And you're saying that's okay because retrospective laws doesn't apply to making something criminal now based on prior criminal conduct, but it does apply to imposing civil obligations now based on prior criminal conduct, to wit, Doe,
right.
where you had to register. So
yeah.
if we had said people who previously had gun convictions have to register, that would be illegal and a violation, but saying they have to get but saying they're criminally liable is not. Does it make sense to make that kind of distinction?
Well, I think it does because again, the person has the option in the criminal, you know, arena not to engage in the prohibited activity,
well,
whereas in the civil, there's no way to avoid it.
Well, you can register. The sex offenders could register, but
right.
they said, I shouldn't have to. That's a retrospective
yeah.
law.
That's what the courts held. And seeing that I'm past my time, unless there's anything else.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Case be taken under submission.